Welcome to Voices,
a podcast from the Institute for Human Rights and Business.
Here, we're seeking to elevate the range of perspectives
on the role of business in the world
and in people's everyday lives.
Hello, everybody. This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. And I'm talking with Antoine Behnard, who is at Sciences Po, the distinguished university in France. He has also been as the head of the FIDH, the major French human rights organization, and is actively involved with Reporters Sans Frontières, the global organization for press freedom and for reporters and their safety and security. We are going to talk actually about business and human rights. So thank you very much for joining us at the podcast.
Hello, Salil. My pleasure.
I suppose my first question is about the reason we had met in Paris a month ago, which was to look at the role of corporations in the context of armed conflict and mass atrocities. No company will say that, you know, we believe in mass atrocities, because unless they're weapons manufacturers. But most companies end up being complicit in some way or the other. So can you unpack that and explain how companies run the risk of being engaged in mass atrocities?
Well, first, we are having this conversation in a very special moment because we are in the beginning of a massive world pandemic with coronavirus. And it's this type of moment where freedoms are restricted, duly restricted, but also unduly. And this type of moment where a new momentum can emerge, and in any case, a new paradigm. And this includes the role and responsibilities of all actors of society, starting with states and their first and primary responsibility. This is classical and obvious in such circumstances, but also with businesses and the role of business in society. A business is first for profit by definition, yet we see how much the role is at stake in the way they would be running for profit under such circumstances, which do play like a catalyst role in highlighting the challenges ahead. We need to define and to think more about what we mean by atrocity. We meant international crimes in the sense of the Rome Statutes now, of the International Criminal Court, yet climate change or migrations, not least mass terrorism activities, and behind all of them, money laundering, illegal flux of money, abuse of corporate asset, etc., have been redefining or inviting to redefine what we consider with atrocity, which in any case all have in common that citizens in huge number do have to suffer such behaviors. So indeed, the role of businesses as it relates to these mass atrocities and more generally human rights is at a moment where the RUGI principles or the OECD principles fortunately do exist as a kind of guidelines, but may not be enough at all to actually encompass these new challenges that will emerge from the ongoing moment.
So what do we do? Do we rely on companies that are doing the right thing? Do we try to create new standards? Because as you very well know, the international system is not geared to have newer treaties and newer mechanisms, particularly when it comes to transferring what are state obligations into private actors.
Yes, and in again, in moments like in the past years and again the past days and weeks, where we see how big and developed and sophisticated the power of companies has become. We have to think of platform social networks with a capacity to produce law in a way, be it private, but if law is to be a rule that will in a way impact society and influence or even dictate behaviors to individuals, then every Sunday this past month, when Mark Zuckerberg was waking up, he was coming up with a new rule, a new standard. And in fact, that has become a kind of world rule, influencing or applying immediately to 2.5 billion people worldwide. So even Stalin wouldn't have dreamed of this. So it's very, very challenging for NGOs and citizens to understand how to relate to this, not to speak about now companies producing medicals and medicine, and with this capacity either to produce chloroquine immediately, which is not expensive, and if it would be confirmed to be a proper curation for the coronavirus, or to refrain from doing it because they would rather focus on much more expensive and accordingly juicy products. So we see how big the power is of such companies. For us and NGOs, the tracks have been twofold, basically. And it's not necessarily either or. It's to work on companies or to work with companies. And it can be both. But in such circumstances, where companies are getting so much traction, power, we may fear or support that more and more action develop against company. In other words, trying, if I may say, to enforce rather than to accompany or cooperate. And I'm saying enforcing very carefully because there's such a disbalance of power there that it should be taken very carefully. But it means, or it may mean, much, much more litigation and court actions to try to get companies accountable. Now, whichever of the two ways develop, in any case, there is here still a gap, and that's the gap of standards, of public standards, which should plan for actual accountability of such companies. And if we take, I will conclude with this, but if we take the platforms, social networks, the rule has been in the 2000s, and it has turned into public standard to plan for them not to be accountable, considering them just as transmitters, not producers, like if their role were to be considered neutral, and accordingly, they should benefit a type of immunity. Well, this was in the mid-2000s, and it has turned into domestic laws in most countries. We see with just 10, 15 years later, how much this was a wrong approach. The lack of accountability has led to terrible problems and mistakes, not only empowering more and more citizens to access culture, information, etc., but also free flow, release, unleash of hate, hatred, harassment, violence, incitement to crime, etc., and many types of violations of freedom. So that is the real challenge, in my view, for the new moment and maybe the new world, having actual public standards that can guide, help frame how to build accountability for these actors, and accordingly enable us as citizens to challenge that accountability.
So here's a challenge and here's a problem, and this is my final question, but it goes at the heart of what you're saying, that we as practitioners in one way and as activists on the other hand, we would like companies to say no when a government asks for information about dissidents, right? I mean, you are in Iran or Saudi Arabia or Myanmar, and if the government says, give us the accounts of all the Rohingyas, and we want the company to say no. So that's when we want the company to act in a particular way, which is defying the law. But at the same time, when a company like Facebook allows misogyny or racist propaganda, or in Myanmar case again, you know, Facebook had the problem of probably aiding and abetting genocide, as UN human rights experts have pointed out. At that time, we want some law to restrain the company. Now, the government is the same, Myanmar. Company is the same, Facebook. And you are talking about standards, which I can see them to be consistent with international human rights standards. But who is to monitor? Who is to implement them? How do we do that?
It's, again, one of the biggest challenges. And right. To stick to the example of Facebook, indeed, it's fascinating how they developed their capacity and have been developing for content curation, for instance, not only with their internal standards, which in fact become a kind of a universal norm, We are lucky because this company based in the Valley decided to refer to Article 19 of the Universal Declaration. But what about their colleagues and competitors from China? What are they referring to? Now, this company decided, Facebook decided to create that oversight mechanism, a kind of appeal court, which has been led for the past weeks now by the former director of Article 19. Again, we are lucky because they will be putting in place something that allegedly will try to be consistent with international standards. Indeed, is this the role of a company? What is the capacity of a state with its primary responsibility to ensure that there is no international crime aiding and abetting on Facebook, when Facebook itself altogether has 30,000 staff contributing to curating? This is not the case in one single state in the world, except maybe China, or it's not maybe actually, except China or Vietnam. But otherwise, what about the capacities of democracies worldwide to actually take over their primary responsibility? It's a huge, enormous challenge. And I'm not sure we can be so optimistic about the outcome because, again, of the disbalance of means, capacities, financial resources at stake. Companies are moving very, very, very fast. So here, more than ever, our role as NGOs is needed, whatever the technique, cooperation in or confrontation, to try to have in the big competition game those actors that may look better or act better to actually be as close as possible to universal standards.
Thank you. That's a very sobering thought to end on, but these are grim times, as we know. My very best wishes to you.